Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to read more from the M39. And guys, I am reinvigorated about this podcast. You know, there were times when I was reading the JCAM where it became a bit of a slog. And there was some effort to go in there and read this stuff that was so boring and didn't apply to what we're doing. And in a way, the M39 doesn't apply to us at all. It's management's handbook. But the insight that it gives of the way management is supposed to do their job, it's so empowering and so eye-opening. It turns the tables on management, on this relationship that we have. Because it's always been one way. It's always been, they know what we're supposed to do, but we don't know what they're supposed to do, what their responsibilities are. And that dynamic is changing now. So the podcast has always been about empowering you, about making sure that you know your rights, making sure that you know the things that you're supposed to do so that management doesn't have that upper hand on you. But now we're going a step further. And it's like this quote from Sun Tzu in The Art of War. He says, "If you know your enemy and yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself, but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle." And that's where we started from, was we didn't know what we were supposed to do, and we didn't know what management was supposed to do, and so management always had the upper hand. And we'd get disciplined, we'd get in trouble, we'd get harassed, and there was nothing we could do about it. And then, eventually, through the first two seasons of this podcast, we learned what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to do things, and that's making ourselves discipline-proof. And so that's that second half, that second third of the Sun Tzu quote, is that we knew ourselves, but we didn't know our enemy. And now we're learning our enemy. And I am here for it. I've been, you know, with the JCAM, I would just read it when it was time to read it. And you and I would read it for the first time together. But with this M39, I'm so into it that I've started reading it just for leisure. So I will have seen some of the stuff that we're going to read, but we're going to go through it together because I want to hear it again. I want to read it again, and I'm going to read it to you. So picking up where we left off from last time, oh my God, I blew almost 3 minutes just not even talking about anything, and here I'm still doing it. So picking up where we left off, we start at 117, utilizing work area and equipment. 117.1, workroom floor layout. The workroom floor must be arranged to minimize walking and to facilitate an orderly flow of mail and equipment. Attention must also be given to selection and layout of authorized equipment that will be used by carriers at a detached unit, such as a carrier staff mailroom in a large office building, as follows. A. Time recording equipment. Oh, this is when we still had time clocks, so I'm going to skip that. B, time cards and keys, supposed to be next to the time clock, but we don't have those anymore, so it doesn't matter. C, throwback cases, place to minimize walking. For example, put one throwback case at the end of every other aisle. At my station, we only have really three aisles, maybe three and a half aisles, and so it's no big deal. We have our one throwback case, and it's not that far away. But if it's a problem at your station, maybe you could ask management to put up another throwback case. D, central markup case. Where practical, locate the central markup case or deposit point on the carrier's line of travel to the distribution case or exit. So the markup case is what I call the carrier endorsed rack. This is where you put your mail that you're going to return to sender. And at my station, we have these trays and tubs where we just put all of our attempted not known into the attempted not known tray, and then a robot marks it all up for us. But I know at some stations, well, I don't know. I presume that there are still some stations where they have to mark up their mail by hand. And in those situations, either way, whichever way you do it, it should be at some convenient location. E, collection mail deposit point. Locate on the carrier's line of travel from the time recording area to the accountable cage. I don't know. We don't have one of those at my station. F, aisle width. Aisles should be wide enough for passage by the carrier and any necessary equipment. I guarantee you there's some stations out there where this is a problem. So if you are a steward and you really want to do something about it, this is your citation, right? It's 117.1F. Is that right? Is it where we are? Yeah, 117.1F. G, relay deposit point. Designate an area for carriers to deposit filled relay sacks. For example, designate an area at one end of each aisle. Relays are going to come up multiple times in the upcoming section, which I know because I've read ahead a little bit. And for those of you who don't work in an area that does relays or foot routes, in some cases, you go out to your mail route without a vehicle. And so whatever your first parking loop or your first section, you're going to bring that with you, like in your satchel or on your push cart, but you can't bring everything with you. You just don't physically have the space. So what will happen is along your route, there'll be these relay points where another carrier will drive out and drop the rest of your mail for you, like in a big sack or however it gets arranged, inside these relay boxes. You use your arrow key to open up the relay box and you pick up that next section of mail. And often you'll also drop whatever mail you've collected back in that relay box. And so that's how you get your mail while you're out on the route. You know, it'll be the mail that you cased in the morning, but then it gets sent out on these relays. And there's going to be more about this in the upcoming area. So anyway, that's how and then also, like, you put, you know, in some of your relay sacks, you might put some extra water. Maybe you put your lunch in one of the relay sacks so that that's ready for you when you get to that relay. H, accountable mail cage. Locate where it will be near the carriers while permitting the clerk to do other work when not serving carriers. Do not require the carriers to make more than one stop for available accountables and keys. An optional method for use in the morning is to take available accountables, letters, flats, parcels, keys, etc., to the carriers using a suitable conveyance capable of holding all these items. Aisles must be wide enough to permit the passage of this equipment. We have one of those at my station that gets used every now and again when the accountables come around to us. That's kind of nice. Otherwise, we just go pick it up. I, markups. Carriers will place mail sorted. Carriers will place mail sorted to required removal categories, such as move left, no address, attempt to not known, no such number, etc., in the throwback cases as they depart for their route. They will also leave undeliverable as addressed mail, sorted to A to Z separations in the designated location at that time. I don't know what A to Z separations are. I would guess it's something that used to exist that we don't have anymore, but I don't know. If you know, drop me a line, classesofmail@gmail.com. Next, lighting, J. Lighting should be satisfactory with a maximum utilization of existing fixtures. K, hold mail. Instruct the carrier to place hold mail in a central location only when space is not available at the carrier's case. A while back, this was a fight in my area. Management had decided that they were going to make this centralized rack where everybody put their hold mail. And I feel like if the stewards at the time had been reading the M39 like I'm reading, then they would know right away, oh no, this is a violation. No, the carriers keep the hold mail at their case. Here it is in 117.1K. So this is how we're empowering ourselves. L, equipment used daily. Sufficient sacks, trays, straps, satchels, hampers, forms, and other equipment needed by the carriers must be readily accessible. Equipment used daily, such as hampers, may be marked with the route number, except when this restricts operational effectiveness and equipment utilization. M, rarely used equipment. Do not store rarely used equipment or temporarily surplus equipment in prime spaces. And now we move on to 117.2. Determine the carrier's case requirements. So if you are having fights about doing six shelves, about having a wing on your case, stuff like that, this is rules that are going to be especially of interest to you. The carrier case, item 124, is the basic letter case for use on all letter carrier routes. Just step back here for a sec. The case itself is called item 124. It's like the order number or something for that case. It's numbered. It's number 124. So when it talks about 124, that's what they're talking about. The delivery unit manager must determine the need for wing cases for letter mail, items 143 or 144, using criteria outlined below. A. Case configurations. Carrier cases will be six equally spaced shelves for casing letters in a non-DPS environment, where either one, two, or modified two bundle systems are used, and in DPS environments where the composite bundle work method is used. I don't think that there are no places that I'm aware of that use any of those anymore. We're all in the DPS environment, and nobody uses the composite two bundle. So we go on to the next part. In delivery units where the vertical flat DPS work method is selected by management, the carrier case will be six, five, or four equally spaced shelves for casing. So we pretty much all use the vertical flat method. This is where you put in your flats on their edge rather than laying flat in a big wide cell. So you can have six, five, or four shelves. It doesn't say you have to have six shelves. B, two deliveries per separation. Letter carriers should normally have two deliveries per one-inch separation. This would be like when you have house-to-house delivery, when each delivery point is a separate stop. C, reserve CMU spaces. That's carrier markup. Designate 15 separations, each one-inch wide, on the right of the bottom item 124 letter case shelf or on the bottom of the right wing case for central markup. Not carrier markup. Either way, in offices that have consistently low volumes of undeliverable as addressed mail, CMU spaces may be located on the top shelf in the same relative position uniformly throughout those individual offices. So for me, I have very little carrier endorsed mail, or what it calls markup mail. So I would prefer mine to be in the top right, but most of my route, or you know, every other case at my station, it's in the bottom right, so that's where mine is going to be also. And on a side note, that area is supposed to be kept clear for your markups, for your carrier endorsed mail, and it's labeled as such. And at my station, of the 60-something routes we have, I think there's maybe three routes that actually have that area clear. Everybody else has their stuffed with forms and who knows what else. So that's not what that's for. It's not a storage area. It's where your carrier endorsed mail is supposed to go to keep it organized. D, when to use wing cases for letters. Do not use wing cases for letters unless the total possible deliveries exceed 420 or the daily cased letter volume exceeds 2,500 letters, and not until all separations in the item 124 case have been used. So there's no way we're going to case more than 2,500 letters. Like, those days are long gone. But it's certainly possible, even probable, to have more than 420 stops. When a wing case must be used to provide additional letter separations, this wing case, item 143 or 144, must be placed to the right of the item 124 letter case. Use of a large wing case. Use item 144 only when required to provide sufficient letter and flat separations without exceeding two deliveries per letter separation. When necessary, adjoining routes may divide the items 124 or 144 for flat separations rather than using a separate item 143 for each route. So the way this reads would tell me that this still is talking about like composite two-bundle system where you're going to be casing tons of letters. We don't do that anymore. It's vertical flat casing, and so, you know, that some of these rules aren't necessarily going to apply. Incidentally, like, vertical flat casing is a term that I only recently learned. When I was teaching in the Carrier Academy, we have these slides, and they're still in the PowerPoint at the Carrier Academy about the one bundle, the two bundle, the modified two bundle. And, like, why in the world is this... is this still on the slides, the Carrier Academy? We haven't done that since before DPS. That's an issue for another time. All right, F. Letter casing equipment required. Using the table below to determine the required casing equipment, or use the table below to determine the required casing equipment. Letter carrier case item 124 with six shelves has 240 separations. With five shelves has 200 separations, and with four shelves, 160 separations, which are each 1 inch wide. Examples of these separations are used as follows for a 6-shelf case. 1. 210 are used to meet basic casing needs. 2. 15 are for central markup. And 3. 15 are for special requirements. Special requirements include expansion for high volume delivery points or spaces needed for hold mail, etc. And there's a chart here that essentially says the same thing, but then talks about how many letters you would case, which is not really an issue anymore. 9. Determine flat separations. Use the same criteria as above when utilizing vertical flat casing or following guidelines below to determine the proper flat separations when using horizontal flat casing. And, well, I'll just go ahead and read it. 1. Foot and park and loop routes. Provide one flat separation for each relay or loop on the letter case. 2. Curb line routes. Provide one flat separation for each half shelf on the letter case. So, yeah, that would definitely only apply to flat casing, which we're not doing anymore. Note, these guidelines may be modified as necessary to spread unusual volumes of flats more evenly in the case. All right, 117.3 is equipment at detached units, which is like a separate post office in a mail on an apartment building or something like that. So if you have something like that, feel free to go to page 11 and check that out. But I think that's too much of an edge case for us to talk about here. 117.4, carrier case labeling. 117.41, carrier case labels must be applied in accordance with the following. A, label uniformly and for efficiency. Delivery unit managers are responsible for efficient use of the class, CLASS, all in caps. It's an abbreviation of some sort or an acronym, but I have no idea what it stands for. Delivery unit managers are responsible for the efficient use of the class case labels. I bet the CL in class stands for case labels. It's case labels, ass. All right, anyways, that's class. Case labels on all carrier cases. They must schedule frequent reviews of carrier case layout to assure maximum efficient use of available equipment, route layout, and housekeeping. B. Locate computerized forwarding system uniformly throughout the office. Set aside 15 spaces on the right of the bottom item 124 letter case shelf or on the bottom shelf of the right wing immediately adjacent to the item 124 letter cases. The spaces may be located in the same relative position on the top shelf in offices that have a consistently low daily volume of undeliverable as addressed mail. Whatever option is used, the locations must be uniform throughout the individual offices. So again, even if I have a personal preference, everybody in the station would have to go to it, and that's not going to happen. If for no other reason, then people just don't like change. C. Label in delivery sequence. The letter separations on the carrier case must be labeled in the exact sequence of delivery below the corresponding separation. For an exception, see 116.841. Using street names and numbers, labeling must proceed from the left to right on each shelf, starting in the left corner of the bottom shelf and ending at the right side of the top shelf. Any unused space should be in the upper right corner of the case. When a wing contains letter separations, label these separations as a continuation or lengthening of the same shelf on the letter case. Firm names may be used when practicable and more convenient. So if you have a delivery point that gets a ton of mail, like when I used to deliver at the strip post office when I first started, we would deliver directly to the hotels, and so there'd be like MGM, and it would be clearly marked on the case. It would just say MGM. You know, it probably had the address on there too. But it made that stuff really easy to find when you were casing. Next, D, print points of delivery under separations. Normally, print 2 points of delivery under each separation. Be guided by average volume of mail for each address. E, identify streets. Separate the different streets with heavy vertical lines. Use colored case labels to identify different street names to assist carriers unfamiliar with the route in casing mail and learning and memorizing the delivery pattern. Print the street name or number near the beginning of each block with characters larger than those for the individual addresses. Incidentally, if you're not already familiar with the notations on the carrier case, I should probably do an episode on this. But where the streets change, like there's a red line that is reasonably long, a vertical red line, and that's supposed to be where the cell dividers are, where like the metal or plastic dividers in between cells. And then there's little short red lines, which are used to subdivide the cells. So if you have two addresses in a cell, on either side is going to be the longer red lines, and then in between the addresses will be the little red line. And so that lets you know that those two addresses share that same cell. And then at the end of the street, we have, it says here, heavy vertical lines. Everywhere I've seen it, it's just a double black line that lets you know that this is the end of the street, and that's where the next street begins. And that's the way it's taught in the Carrier Academy. Next, signify sections. Use colored labels or symbols to signify the sections receiving only one delivery on a two-trip route. I don't know if we have any two-trip routes anymore. G, number relays or loops on labels. Carrier cases must be labeled to identify relays, loops, or swings on the letter case labels. Flat case labels must indicate the exact delivery area covered by each separation and should correspond to relays or loops. So on my route, I've done this. Every park and loop is labeled where it begins. This is park and loop 1, park and loop 2, park and loop 3, and so on. And that is definitely not enforced throughout our station. And it is extremely helpful when somebody is unfamiliar with the route to have those proper case labels. And this is something that I would love to see management get more involved, because I think a lot of carriers don't know how to even make those changes in their edit book. Again, one of these days I'll have an edit book episode, but that day is not today. H, label cases uniformly. Label all cases at the main office and other delivery units uniformly. I, revise labels when adding deliveries. As additional deliveries are added to a route, the labels must be adjusted to fit these additions into the case in exact delivery sequence. J, no changes in carrier cases without approval. When dividers or separators must be removed to provide additional space for delivery points having a consistently high daily volume, changes in the carrier's case can only be approved by the delivery unit manager and the case labels must be adjusted. K, use class carrier case labels. Case labels, ass. Class carrier case labels should be used ordinarily. I think I'm funny. Anyway, class carrier case labels should be used ordinarily when routes are newly established and when extensive route changes necessitate complete replacement of case labels. Submit PS Form 313, requisition for printed carrier case labels, or the appropriate class label requisition for class labels to the designated label printing unit. An employee skilled in lettering, if approved by the district, may be used to prepare case labels if the time required is not excessive. And that ends 117. And we're going to move on because I'm enjoying this. 118, satchel carts. This is the little three-wheeled carts that carriers will use often in urban areas where if they have a walkout route, a foot route, then this is how they carry a lot more mail with them. 118.1, assignment. Postmasters and unit managers are responsible for authorizing use of satchel carts on the routes. These carts are normally designed to carry two satchels. In reviewing requests for assignment of satchel carts, they are to consider the following factors. A, relieve mail carriers primarily from physical burden of carrying heavy loads of mail. B, give priority and assignment to carriers with physical impairments. C, assign carriers not having physical impairments only with the express understanding that street time will not increase as a direct result. When a carrier uses a cart, the 35-pound mail load limitation does not apply. The satchels on the cart are to be filled to capacity, both on the carryout portion and at each relay point. When first assigning a cart to a route, also consider adjusting the number of relay points due to the greater carrying capacity of the cart. I had opportunity not long ago to use a cart because I was training somebody who had come from Chicago and brought her cart with her. And I'm on a all park and loop or almost entirely park and loop route. And so how does this be interesting? I could carry multiple streets at a time, which I did. The problem, what I didn't like about it is these are houses that I deliver to that have these big front yards. And I couldn't really, you know, there's a lot of rocks and like uneven paths. So I couldn't really take the carts with me up to the door. So what I would have to do is just leave the cart out in the street as I walked up to the front door, and I didn't care for that. So the cart did not really work out for me. But it was cool to push that thing around, and it definitely takes the load off of the body. All right, so that's it about carts. 118.2, follow-up. Oh, no, it isn't. This is the follow-up about the carts. After assignment of satchel carts on city delivery routes, local management shall A. require carrier to use carts regularly, including day of inspection. Irregular use at the option of carrier is not permitted. B. Decide if cart will remain on route when a change in carrier assignment occurs. If a carrier with physical impairment is reassigned to another route, continued need for the use of a cart must be evaluated. C. When street time has increased as a direct result of assignment of a cart, withdraw the cart immediately and reassign it to another carrier or report it as surplus. All right, and now we're going to move on to section 12, office work routine. So all of that was 11, and then I guess the numbering system is like 11, and then it's 111, 112, 113, 113.1, you know, stuff like that. So 12, office work routine, it starts with 121, 121, carrier work methods, office, 121.1, casing mail, 121.11, casing systems. And I'm going to skip this because we pretty much all use the vertical flat casing system. And if you have a... it comes up later. All right, so we use the vertical flat casing system. Now, 121.12, letter mail defined. Letter-sized mail is defined as mail which can be routed into a six-shelf letter case, item 124D, between separators, vertically, without bending or folding. The size of the mail is determined by the smallest vertical space between any two shelves. See Handbook M41-922.41. So there you go. You're looking for a working definition. What's a flat versus what's a letter? There's your definition. 121.13, general. Letter mail is normally cased vertically. Flat mail is cased horizontally. Of course, that's not the case anymore. Pre-sequence flat mailings will be treated as a third bundle or collated. Small parcels and rolls are sorted with flats when practical. Boom. There it is in the rules, right? Some of you guys are probably still dealing with managers who don't want to let you case your spurs. But here it is even in their manual. It's in our manual. It's in their manual. Dude, we are absolutely allowed to case our spurs. Odd-shaped articles which cannot be cased are handled as separate pieces. Carriers are expected to sort mail to the proper separations correctly in one handling. 121.14, letter mail. To case letter mail, the carrier stands a few inches back from the center of the case where labels can be easily read and letter separations reached without moving the feet. The carrier picks up 2 or more inches of mail with the left hand. When the hand is raised, letters are in the correct reading position. The carrier reads the essentials in the street lines to the proper case separations. The addressee's name is read only when the street address triggers a recall of information involving a change of address, special instructions, etc. So there it is. When you're casing, just look at the street address. 121.15, pre-sequence letter mail and address cards. When pre-sequence letter mail and address cards are authorized to be sorted, they should be worked into an empty case whenever possible, unless this would delay preferential mail. The carrier holds pre-sequence letter mail in the left hand close to the separations being used. The right hand moves along the shelf, placing the mail into the correct separations. It is closely followed by the left hand so motion is not wasted reaching for the next piece. So an example of this would be when you get marriage mail. At my station, I'm on a park and loop route, so I'm limited to 3 bundles. So if I get marriage mail where I have my weekly ads, plus I have a card that goes to every house that's has the address for the ad. So now I have my my DPS as one bundle, I have my residual as a second bundle, and then I have my ads as a third bundle, and that's it. I'm maxed out. So that fourth bundle, that is my what we would call Advo cards, those can be cased. And so the way it talks about doing it in here is you're going to hold them in your left hand and get right up on that case, and then you're just kind of flick them in with your right hand quickly, rather than standing back at a more centralized position where you can reach everything in the case. You're going to get right up on those addresses because you know they're just going to come one after the other after the other, and so you essentially deal them out right there on the spot. There's good advice in here. Next, 121.16. I know last one I said 15. I guess I haven't settled on a consistent way to read those. It doesn't matter. Flats and spurs. When casing flats and small parcels and rolls, spurs, the carrier stands directly in front of the flat case, holding approximately 50 pieces, 6 inches, in the left arm while distributing with the right hand. The carrier will not pick up pieces individually from the case ledge. Only the essentials in the street lines of the address are read. The addressee's name is read only when the street address triggers a recall of a change of address, special instructions, etc. So here again, it's right in 121.16. It says flats and spurs. Now, it also says that you should pick up 50 pieces or 6 inches. In my opinion, that's too heavy. And that's why a lot of carriers get like torn labrums and torn rotator cuffs and stuff. You know, I'm no doctor or physical therapist, but to me that feels too heavy. So I don't pick up that bunch of mail. And if management were to give me a hard time about it, I would argue that it's a ergonomic issue where I think I'm doing damage to my shoulder by holding that much mail. That's my take on it. All right. 121.17, pulling down flats. After all flats and spurs have been cased, there it is again, yes, you can case your spurs, the carrier will pull, sequence, and strap out the contents of one flat separation at a time. The carrier sequences flat mail by, and having read this before, I can tell you that it's a way to get your flats in order if you're doing horizontal flat casing, but we don't do that, so I'm going to skip it. 121.18, collating pre-sequenced mailings. Instruct the carrier to follow the procedures outlined in 121.17, except place the sequence flats. Oh, this is also if you're doing the flat or the horizontal flat casing, so never mind. 121.2, special instructions. 121.21, expedited preferential mail. 121.211, morning. Carriers and delivery units operating under EPM procedures, that's expedited preferential mail, receive, sequence, and prepare mail using the same work methods as those in non-EPM delivery units. Generally, only preferential mail is cased in the morning, while non-preferential mail is cased in the afternoon. However, when carriers receive incidental pieces of non-preferential mail mixed with preferential mail, these pieces must be cased with the preferential mail. 121.212, afternoon. In the afternoon, all available non-preferential mail should be at the carrier's cases prior to the carrier's return from the street. This mail includes flats, letters, and spurs. In addition to casing this mail, there you go again, you case your spurs, the non-preferential flat mail is sequenced and placed back into the separation. These flats are not strapped out or trayed until the following morning. The next morning, the preferential flats will be sorted and collated with those sequenced previously. 121.22, go over expedited preferential mail a little bit more. So just in case you didn't, in case that wasn't totally clear to you, in offices that do that, they actually case all of their non-preferential mail in the afternoon. So you come in the morning and you should only have preferential mail, periodicals, first class, priority, stuff like that at your case, ready for you to case. Anything that's non-preferential is set aside and you case that in the afternoon when you get back. So in the afternoon, you're casing the non-preferential mail for tomorrow. And then it sits in your case overnight. When you come in the next morning, all you have is your preferential mail. You case that up, out the door you go. And then again, you'll case today's non-preferential mail in the afternoon. All right, 121.22, multi-receptacle delivery. 121.221, definition. Multiple receptacle delivery points are those having a number of individual locked receptacles at a single delivery point. Examples include apartment house receptacles and neighborhood delivery and collection boxes, NDCBUs, in case you ever wondered what that stood for, neighborhood delivery and collection box unit. 121.222, mailroom or VIM installations. I don't know what VIM stands for. Carriers serving rear-loading boxes in mailroom or VIM installations should receive mail segmented for these locations. We don't do segmented mail anymore, so I'm going to skip that. But here's one that carriers often ask about. 121.223, mail having incomplete addresses. So these are the instructions to management for how carriers are supposed to handle, like, a piece of mail that doesn't have the apartment number. Here we go. Carriers are expected to use their knowledge of a route to effect delivery of mail having an incomplete address. Well, there you have it, guys. It's in black and white. You are supposed to try to make the save. Where current locations are available in apartment lobbies in compliance with Publication 17, Apartment House Mail Receptacles, Regulations, and Manufacturing Standards, Section D, Paragraph 1, carriers may refer to such directories to complete delivery of mail without apartment numbers. Note, carriers are not permitted to maintain apartment directories. However, with the approval of the delivery unit manager, they may use a list furnished by a building manager. Under these circumstances, carriers may cross off removals from such lists, but they will not be permitted to make any additions, address corrections, or other changes. So, you can get a tenant list from the apartment manager, and you can use that to reference if you have mail for insufficient address. I'm going to add here my own note that if your insufficient address mail has an ancillary service endorsement, like address service, electronic service, you should not make the save on those pieces of mail, because that mailer wants to know if there's something wrong with the address. That's part of the service that they're paying for. So somewhere else, I think it's in the M41, that like it says you make the save unless other instructions are present on the envelope, and that would be another instruction, like the address service requested, is they want to know if this is a bad address so that they can, you know, make the corrections or whatever. All right. And once again, if I'm wrong about this stuff, or if you have extra information, obviously I find these things interesting, feel free to send me a message, classesofmail@gmail.com. 121.3, pulling down cased mail. 121.31, foot routes. 121.311, flats. Ordinarily, flat mail is pulled down, sequenced, and strapped out before letter-sized mail. Obviously, we don't do that anymore. We use the vertical flat casing method. Relay sacks are packed first, while the satchel is packed last. Under delivery point sequencing, if the method selected for the residual letters is to case these letters with the vertical flats, which it is, the letters and flats are pulled down and strapped out at the same time. 121.312, letters. After all flats have been strapped out, the letter-sized mail is pulled down. Letter mail is pulled one relay at a time. Carriers must prepare their relays so that relay carriers can meet the scheduled departure times. The carry-out satchel must be pulled last. Within each relay, the carrier begins by pulling the mail for the first delivery point and continues pulling each separation of the entire relay in the sequence in which it will be delivered. 121.313, preparing relays. Normally, carriers on foot routes will pull down. Normally, carriers on foot routes will pull down, sequence, and strap out flats before pulling down letters. However, carriers may be instructed to pull the flats and then the letters for the same relay to avoid rehandling the relay sacks. But with us, we do those together as a single bundle. When a foot carrier prepares relays, there should be sufficient sacks on hand. After properly labeling an empty sack, the carrier inserts the bundles of flats and letters plus any uncased spurs or merchandise samples. When a sack has been loaded with all the mail for the particular relay, the label is checked and the sack is closed. The completed relays are then placed in a designated location. Loaded relay sacks must never exceed 70 pounds in weight. So, I don't know if it gets addressed a little bit later. I don't recall seeing it, but you may be wondering what foot carriers do about parcels, right? You can case in your spurs or you put your spurs into the sacks. What do you do with your parcels? Well, in places that have foot routes, they also have what are called parcel post routes, where there are carriers who just deliver parcels. So that's how that gets handled. I am of the opinion that in areas that are totally overloaded with like Amazon deliveries and they have CCAs who just run parcels full time, we should be pushing to create parcel post routes in those areas so that we can have full-time work. That's not up to me, and I'm not in one of those areas, but that just at its face, to me, that seems reasonable. All right, next, loading the carrier satchel, 121.314, loading the carrier satchel. Carriers must use a satchel when delivering mail on foot, except for authorized dismount deliveries. Carriers are expected to load the satchel with up to 35 pounds of mail. The weight of the satchel is not included in the 35 pounds. A, carriers using a single satchel. The first mail to be delivered is loaded into the satchel. Letter bundles are placed in the bottom of the satchel in the reverse order of delivery. The carrier then stands the flats on edge with the addresses faced so they can be easily read when carrying the satchel. Spurs and samples that were not strapped out with the flats are then placed in the satchel. This is essentially the way I carry my flats, is I have them in my bag with the addresses facing me so that I can read them. I find it so much more comfortable than having them on my arm. But I have what's listed in item B, carriers using a double satchel. Carriers have the option of wearing a double satchel. I highly recommend it, at least if you're doing park and loop. I love it. In several configurations, according to their needs and the needs of the route. It can be used as a single or double pouch with or without the shoulder straps and waist belt. When using a configuration with the waist belt, the satchel is put on first and then loaded with mail. Carriers should use their discretion in arranging mail in the double satchel to ensure the most efficient methods and comfortable weight distribution. Dude, I'm all about that comfortable weight distribution because I got enough weight already. All right, 121.32, park and loop and drive out routes. Flats and letters are pulled down and strapped out using the same procedures as foot routes. As the mail for each loop is pulled down and strapped out, it is placed into trays or other containers. If using a single satchel, carriers load the mail for the first loop into the satchel before leaving the office. If using the double satchel in a configuration with the waist belt, carriers load mail into the satchel at the first delivery point. The carrier is expected to load the satchel with up to 35 pounds of mail. 121.33, curbline routes. Actually, I'm going to go back here because when we do our route inspections, it's really the only time, at least at my office, that carriers will actually put that first relay into their satchel. It's not something we normally do. It's not something that I normally do, even though I know the rules. However, I have a double satchel. And it says if using the double satchel configuration or in a configuration with the waist belt, carriers load mail into the satchel at the first delivery point. So when management says, hey, you got to take that mail from your first loop and put it directly into your satchel, I can say, I don't have to. I put it in when I get to the delivery point. And that's how this is empowering. That's exactly what this information is for. So that you have that knowledge to say, no, I don't have to do that. I'm going to do it, you know, the way I do it because that's what's in the rules. And to be able to, like, cite the actual source, ah, dude, it is beautiful. All right. And likewise, if you're a steward and a carrier is given a hard time about this, you know, I don't know that a carrier will get disciplined for it, but it's not impossible. Well, here's your defense right here. At least for me, I got the double satchel. I don't have to do it that way. Oh, that's so nice. That's why I read this stuff. 121.33, curbline routes. Curbline carriers pull down using the same work methods outlined for foot routes, but they must place letter and flat mail in delivery sequence in trays without strapping out. Carriers on curbline routes will normally handle pre-sequenced letter and flat mailings as separate bundles, unless the delivery unit manager authorized the casing and or collating of the mailings. All right, and that finishes up delivery methods. Just an FYI, curbline means like you deliver from the truck. It's either curbside, which is also called out the window where you sit in the seat, or sidewalk delivery, which is also called stop and hop or over the curb where you have to jump out of the truck, put the mail in a box, jump back in. All right, so that is that. Section 122 is scheduling carriers, and we are going to save that for the next episode. Guys, I can tell you, I'm going to tell you now, how much I am enjoying reading the M39. It's so much new information for me. I presume it's new information for you too. And it's good information. Yeah, we're really learning things that are shifting that balance of power. And it feels very good. So thanks for taking this ride with me. dude, we are so, so discipline proof at this point, and we're just going to keep getting stronger. It's the best, guys. Thanks for listening. I will catch you next time.